Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper. And today, I'm down at Taneycomo Lake, south of Branson, Missouri. I'm sitting in a beautiful room here at Lily's Landing, right on the banks of Taneycomo. Got a couple of good friends, outdoor writers, outdoor communicator types, and I don't know what we're going to talk about. I'm sure fish is going to be mentioned because we had a great day down on the water today. But I got with me Tyler Dykes, the Show Me Fly Guy, and we'll give you all his contact information at the end of the podcast, but this guy ties some fabulous flies, and we're going to be talking about that just a little bit in the podcast. Also, got a longtime friend, Kenny Keezer, one of the most, boy, I got to think of adjectives here for Keezer, but been around for a long time, very busy outdoor writer. Probably, I would bet money on you, Keezer, that you've written as many outdoor articles as anybody that ever existed. Would you say that's a fair description?
Possible.
Absolutely. What Tyler is a lot younger than us, you know. We've been around for many, many decades, Kenny, and seen a lot of things happen in the outdoor industry. But one of the things we love to see is new people coming into the industry. And I know Tyler came into the Missouri Outdoor Communicators how long ago?
About 5 years ago, I think.
About 5 years ago. And, you know, we're a group that, when did we start? We've been around for 35 years or
no,
so.
No, this is our 50th year.
MOC?
Yeah. No. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant you and I as writers.
Oh, yeah. So I've got 56 years in.
I got 50.
I'm a little bit older than you.
Yeah.
But one of the great things we'd like to see is to see new talent coming into the field. And I know Kenny has experienced this over the decades, and I have too. You have young folks ask you, well, how do you do that? How do you get into outdoor communication? How do you get started? You know, and I usually tell most of them just, hey, get an education first. Boy, that eliminates a lot of people that don't want to make that initial investment in you know, getting started. But, hey, we've stuck with it for decades through thick and thin. And Kenny will tell you, how many dozens of writers do you think you've seen in your lifetime that have fallen by the wayside just because they couldn't stay consistent?
And, you know, a lot of them were like these big superstars, shining stars, and we just knew they were going to be great. And they just faded out, and they couldn't do the competition because outdoor writing is very competitive.
It really is, and particularly if you're talking about bigger jobs, and there's not a lot of bigger jobs, particularly not anymore. Mm-hmm. And Kenny and I could probably, we ain't got enough fingers and toes to count the number of magazines and newspapers, hard copy, that we've seen go away within our lifetime.
Yep.
But here we are down at Lake Taneycomo. We're trying to keep the outdoor communications going, and this event is put on by the Conservation Federation of Missouri. It used to be an annual event. It's a semi-annual now, I guess, but still a great event right here at Lily's Landing, and Lily's have been great about hosting this event, putting us up in these fabulous rooms, helping feed us, rounding up guides to take us out. But guys, let's talk about what we did today. Yep. Kenny and I fished together right off the bat. Remember our guide's name? Put you on the spot. Ah, that's two of us. That's terrible. But that's two old guys. Two old guys for you. Now, we'll put Tyler on the spot.
Okay.
Who'd you fish with this morning?
Darren Sadler, longtime friend. I've fished with him. My wife's fished with him. And yeah, I've been fortunate to get to know Darren for a few years.
God bless those young minds.
Yeah, no kidding. But anyway, we went out fly fishing this morning. I was fishing a tandem rig, two teeny tiny scuds. I'm saying size 18 or 20. And I don't think I'd ever fished quite like that. There was a super long leader on this line that you really had to work with. And it took me a good 10 minutes to kind of get the technique down, you know. I didn't wrap too much line around my ears, but it was a little bit of a challenge. I wasn't going to bring that up, but Keezer wrapped his around his head.
No, I did.
That's tough. The longer the leader, it's just tougher on every level. Landing fish, casting, managing line, just everything.
How long was that leader?
It had to be 12, 15 feet.
Oh, at least.
Yeah, really long. But he had a technique. You had to lay that out on the water to strip line, you know, through your guys and that sort of thing. And it took quite an effort to pick that up, but you had to get it high enough. And I have a bit of trouble. You don't stretch my arms above my head very far anymore. But you had to get that rod high to bring. It had a pretty good size foam bobber on it and that length of line. So you're whipping out the short distance, bring it back behind you, lay it down on the water. You weren't casting or double hauling or roll casting or any of that kind of stuff. You literally had to lay that line behind you on the water to get the tension to pull more line out and then get it high enough to lob it out in the water.
Kind of had a water load it.
Exactly. Yeah. That was a term that he used. I don't know that I'd ever heard that before.
Yeah. And were you guys throwing a Provo rig? Is that what that was?
No, it wasn't a Provo rig. I threw a Provo rig some this afternoon. It was just a tandem.
Okay.
A fly outfit. They were probably 18 inches apart. Little weight, I think, on the very end of the leader, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. In other words, you're trying to keep contact with the bottom.
Yes.
Yeah. And another very tricky thing. Keezer and I both have problems with this. Once we kind of learned how to cast, and it seems so strange here. We are in our 70s. And we're still learning new fishing techniques, you know.
Yeah, we've both been fly fishing for, since we were kids.
Yeah, decades.
But I'd never done this before.
I never had either, but a very effective technique. But then the other thing we had to overcome was the bite itself.
Yes.
Wow. How long did it take us to get on setting the hook, you know?
And the heck of it is, Bill and I both hooked big fish.
Oh, yeah.
My hook got broke off, and he got his. You could see his. It was probably at least 20-inch brown, and it was coming in and got off.
Yep. Well, it broke my leader.
It did?
Yeah, again. Being used to the technique, I was holding the fly line in my left hand, and he surged once, and I let it slide through a little bit, but I didn't get up to the reel. And when he surged the second time, I couldn't let the line slide between my fingers fast enough to snap my leader. Yep. I cried. But
we all did.
They will break your heart every chance they get.
Oh, they really will. But Tyler, I want to delve into your history a little bit. Keezer and I have got a lot of history. We've been around for seven decades, you know, so a lot of things happened in our lifetime. We both grew up, I could safely say rather poor, and the outdoors was our recreation. Man, it was our life. That's what we grew up doing. But where do you come from?
Well, I currently live in Liberty, Missouri. Always lived in the Kansas City area, but I spent a lot of time on my grandparents' farm up on the border of Ray and Carroll County. So northwest Missouri, not too far away from Kansas City. But
not a lot of trout streams in northwest Missouri.
Not a lot. No. Lot more, you know, catfish and farm pond largemouth than rainbow trout or browns or anything.
Well, that's how I grew up, you know, in the muddy waters of Mississippi County, very near the Mississippi River. Had a bayou that ran through our farm, but boy, it was chock full of huge largemouth bass, pound and a quarter bluegill. And just incredible. And I got my first fly rod when I was 10 years old. I was catching 8-pound largemouth on huge poppers when I was 10 years old. Yeah. And it was just an incredible fishery. But another thing I love that fly rod business. I'd read about it in Outdoor Life magazine. You know, I've seen pictures of Ted Williams and all these guys. And my heart was set. I wanted to be like those guys. But older I got, you know, I started out 7 or 8 years old thinking along those lines. I got that first fly rod at 10. And I used to tear the coupons out of little advertising coupons out of Outdoor Life. I'd send them off to these outfitters in Canada and Alaska. And I had boxes of information, you know. And, man, I had to be gosh, I was way up in high school before I ever left the county, I think, you know.
I did the same thing.
Yeah. But boy, did I have an imagination. And imagination's important. It grew into a lifestyle for me and just absolutely loved it, having my outdoor heroes, and then was fortunate enough to work my way through college, University of Missouri, Columbia, studied, you know, conservation, forestry, and outdoor recreation, all those sorts of things. And I've just had an unbelievable lifetime from my viewpoint, from where I come from. I would have never thought it was ever possible. In fact, I knew by the time I was 8 years old, I wanted to be an outdoor writer.
But, oh, wow.
But coming from where I came from, the University of Missouri Journalism School, there was always touted as one of the best, if not the best, in the world. That intimidated me so, I didn't go to journalism school.
Yeah.
But I went in these other fields, took a lot of writing courses, and it transpired into what it is. But it would have never happened if it hadn't been for people like Kenny Keiser, Joel Vance, Spence Turner, you know, some of the guys that are gone that were our heroes,
yeah,
who helped us along the way. So we're sitting here looking at you.
Well, I feel the same way about you guys. I'm a big fan of all the work that you guys do. And like, I look at you guys as role models and people that I want to be like. And
well, we're probably not the best role models, or especially Keiser.
Boy, he sure sets his standards low, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. But you know how it was. What?
The first time at an OWA conference, I met Uncle Homer Circle. I thought that I had seen the Messiah himself. And he sat down at me at dinner, and he asked me, he wouldn't talk about himself. He asked me all about me, mm-hmm, and made me talk about myself. And he taught me that man was amazing.
He was. Incredible people. And particularly for those times, I often scratch my head, how did those guys do it? How did they get to where they were? And they, you know, they had careers that spanned decades.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a 5-year thing, I'm in and out and done. You know, they were the icons of the industry. And Joel Vance was one that I always looked up.
Oh, yeah.
So much to it. He edited our Missouri Conservation Magazine for, I don't know, well over 20 years. Just an incredible storyteller. And for me, the real people that I keyed in on were storytellers. Ray I is another one. Yeah. You know, he's a turkey hunting type. And Ray probably helped me more in my outdoor career than anybody. But I've got to tell you, Tyler, that, hey, you're on the right track. You're doing the right things.
Oh, thank you.
I think that a lot of young people coming into the industry, many of them failed to join the professional organizations. Here you are. And you had to have some credentials to get into the Missouri Outdoor Communicators. It's not just a given. So you had to have already done some work, got some credentials laid down. And if you want to get into a GLOW, that's Association Great Lakes Outdoor Writers. Yep. And there's several organizations, Kenny, and you've been president of several of those. CEOPA, what's that stand for?
Southeastern Outdoor Press Association. I was president of that and of Missouri Outdoor Communicators, too. Then I did board service at the Outdoor Writers Association of America and the Association of Great Lake Outdoor Writers. I'm kind of into this.
Yeah, he really has been. And this is a guy that, I mean, I look up to Kenny. He's in several Hall of Fames, probably more than anybody I know of right off the top of my head. But that's not something, again, that just happens. He's worked decades and decades and decades for those things to happen. But what first got you interested in the outdoor communications field?
Oh, well, I really just wanted to kind of share with folks like what I did and how I did it, because I think it's kind of unconventional. I mean, you don't think of, you know, a kid from Kansas City being, you know, eaten up by fly fishing. It's not exactly the fly fishing mecca of the world or anything. But so I kind of took an unconventional path. I didn't get started with fly fishing until I was in my early 20s when my dad got me a fly rod for Christmas, because I think I was hanging around the house too much after my undergraduate work at the University of Central Missouri. And So I was interested in trout fishing, and he got me a fly rod, and the rest is history after that. But I just kind of wanted to, share what I was doing, because I thought maybe other people would benefit from it. Like that was really the main goal. Is I thought if I can write something and kind of, you know, tell my story and put it in my own words, maybe somebody else will be able to glean something from it and think, you know what, shoot, if this guy can do it, he self-taught and, you know, didn't do it since he was 8 years old, anybody can do it.
If I was to give you advice on writing an outdoor story, I would suggest that you write that story so someone in an old folks home, yep, who could no longer go out and fish or hunt, mm, can read that, and you put them in the blind or you put them in the boat.
Okay.
Don't let them read about you. Let them make it about themselves, right, because on, of the way you write it. That's a big key.
Excellent point. I can't believe you brought up old folks homes.
I know.
We're so close to it, Kenny.
Now, no kidding.
My mother's 97 years old. Still just sharp as a tack, of course, physically a little bit feeble, but she's my biggest fan. And she gets several newspapers where my articles appear, and her eyesight's poor enough. She has to have somebody read them to her, but she'll gather all the folks she can to come into her room or
in
the cafe or wherever so that they could listen to it too, you know. And had the coolest thing happen. A year or so ago, there was a couple came into the home, and the old gentleman, you know, was a couple years older than his wife and wasn't quite as good a shape as her, and he was blind. And a gal and I go to church with, she's a realtor, and she was around. She had to go see these people. They were selling their home through her and everything. Mm-hmm. She says, Bill, I walked in that room, and this elderly lady is reading your outdoor article to this gentleman.
Wow.
And said he wants to hear it every week. And of course, he'd been a hunting fisherman all his life. And she said, it's just like he's going right back out to the stream or to a field. He's reliving all that. Yeah. So you never know what kind of an impact you're going to have on people.
Can I tell a story about that?
Absolutely. We're all about stories.
I wrote a story called Using Preparation H to Catch Crappie.
I should have known.
and it ran in the newspaper. And I got a phone call from the editor, and he said, this old man wants to talk to you. I said, okay, fine. So the old man called me, and he said, I just wanted you to know I was sitting on the toilet stool reading your story about Preparation H, and I got to laughing so hard I fell on the floor, and I'm not in the best of health anymore. My wife and my son had to help me up. And I read the next paragraph, and I fell on the floor again laughing. That is the biggest compliment I've ever had as a writer.
That's a good one. I mean,
true story.
I mean, talk about affecting your readers. I mean, that's amazing.
I can't claim that I've ever knocked anybody off the toilet with a story, but
I've never heard of it before.
Well, and to hear your perspective on that is, you know, to tell a story for somebody in an older generation to go back in time. And I'll definitely keep that in mind. And that's a perspective that's different than mine, because my background is I've got an elementary education degree. I've been teaching middle school for 24 years. And wow. I guess the way I look at things is if I were writing this to a teenager or, you know, a younger adult, like I'm trying to say, hey, here's what I did. Either do it this way or don't do it this way. Like this is what worked for me, or this is what failed, and don't try this. Uh-huh. So, but that's an interesting perspective. That's another way to look at it.
I tell you, almost got an advantage on us having a degree in education. You know how to educate people.
Well, so, I hope so.
And I don't, and I teach at Park Hill.
Oh, yeah.
I teach a fishing and a hunting and a conservation class at Park Hill.
Oh, that's
awesome. And sometimes I do a writing class for them.
And I have
for several years.
But isn't it incredible? There's opportunities out there that we never, ever think about. And I've been to umpteen, high school classes to give short fly fishing classes, whatever. But this one thing, Kenny, I tell you what, I'm going to hold that to the second half of the program because we're getting close to intermission here. But we want to talk about your fishing program. This guy actually wrote a fishing program.
Okay.
All right. I let the cat out of bag. That's all we're going to talk about this segment. Hey, but this would be a good time to take a break. We're going to take just a short break here to hear from some of our sponsors. But folks, hope you've enjoyed the first half of this program, because we've just touched the tip of the iceberg. And guys, we're not staying up all night, I can tell you that.
Oh, okay.
Thank God.
So yeah, we got fish in the morning.
Yeah.
I'm toast.
So while we take this break, get your mind in order here. Kenny, I only want the best stories. I don't want any more toilet stories.
Already gave you one.
All right, folks. We'll be right back.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browse the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. Having a great time down on Taney Como Lake. I caught a ton of trout today. I don't think Keezer caught any. Hey, he deserves it. This guy picks on me more than anybody in the outdoor industry, and I don't think I deserve it at all. But I'm sitting here with Tyler Dykes and Kenny Keezer. Tyler has, he goes by Show Me Fly Guy.
Yep.
I want to talk about Show Me Fly Guy a little bit. What's it entail? What's it all about?
Well, like I said, it just kind of started off by wanting to share my story with everybody. I had a fishing journal, and I after college, I was really getting into fishing, and I started tracking all my data and, you know, all my trips and just trying to record observations and patterns and things. And I ran out of pages in my journal one day, and the librarian at our middle school said, "Hey, you should just start a blog. Like, not only do you just keep documenting everything, you can share it with other people too." And from there, it just took off. It turned into a YouTube channel and a Instagram account and Facebook page. And that's where it came from. Like, that was the origin of it. So
once it started, just kind of snowballed. Then.
It did. So it's showmeflyguy.blogspot.com. And I just kind of record my, you know, what happens with me. And I get to set my own agenda and share how much I want, whenever I want. And, you know, don't have anybody to tell me yes or no. And it's just, I like doing it that way.
Hey, that's pretty key to enjoying this type of thing. I feel the same way. You know, you kind of go at your own pace. But you have developed a little business centered around tying flies. How long have you been marketing flies?
Oh, my gosh. Probably it's about 7 or 8 years now. And I go through the Etsy platform because they do all the processing and they keep everybody's, you know, credit cards and it all confidential, and they run the whole that series. And
so people can go to the showmeflyguy.etsy.com and find those flies.
That's it.
Well, what's your favorite fly to tie?
Oh, favorite one to tie? Well, it has to be something not too easy, but not too time consuming either. it'd probably be a streamer that I developed, and it's just a zonker. Like, it's nothing fancy.
But it catches fish.
It does. Yeah. It's caught largemouth, smallmouth, channel cat, bluegill, carp. I mean, it's awesome.
Carp?
Oh, yeah. It's a rarity, but it's happened a few times.
Hey, carp on a fly rod.
Oh, that'd be a heck of a fight.
That is underrated.
Different story, man.
Way underrated.
You betcha. So what's the most popular fly that you sell?
The one I probably sell more than anything is a fly called Bennett's Lunch Money. And
really?
I tie it in a few different patterns, all black, a bait fish, kind of a green and white pattern, and then a bluegill pattern, kind of green and yellow.
So I take it you catch a lot of trout on that fly.
Not on that one. That's really more of a smallmouth fly.
Gotcha.
And I kind of bulked it up and use it for largemouth. It's a good one. I will throw it for trout one of these days. Maybe on the white. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Those the big streamer eaters down there.
Absolutely. So you're in the Kansas City area.
Yes, sir.
Where do you do the larger portion of your fishing?
Oh, man. I kind of consider my home like Watkins Mills State Park.
Really?
And it was interesting because we just went to a dinner where we found out that, you know, there's so many other states that you gotta pay to get into their state parks. And this is not the case. And I just love that lake with all my heart. And it's about a 20-minute drive from my house. And it's just far enough that it makes you feel like you're going on a fishing trip. But it's not so close that, you know, it's,
right.
you feel too close to home. So.
Well, it's interesting you bring up state parks. We were just at a meeting at the Fish App over at Bass Pro. Mm-hmm. And we had some guys from the conservation department, Jason Sumners, talk to us. And, of course, Tyler with CFM talking about the state park tax that's coming up. And, of course, all of us are in favor of that tax to continue.
Yes.
And so many people confuse the Missouri Department of Conservation, 1/8 of 1% sales tax that is solely for the conservation department. And we don't vote on that. That's set.
Yep. Thank goodness.
Yes, absolutely. It's done wonders for the state of Missouri and for fish and game. And non-game species as well. But in November, we're going to see on the ballot a 1/10 of 1% sales tax that is a renewal tax for Missouri State Parks and Soil Conservation. Has nothing to do with the Missouri Department of Conservation. Mm-hmm. But you just mentioned free state parks.
Yes.
All right. I wish we had Brandon Butler here. We'd get him on his stump, talking about he came from Indiana and he was accustomed to paying to get in to state parks, and he came to Missouri, and lo and behold, there is no entrance fee. I'd like for us to keep it that way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we already paid for it once. We shouldn't have to pay for it again. I mean, that's the way I feel, and I think a lot of people in Missouri just don't think we know how good we have it because that's what we're used to. We don't see what other people in other states have to go through, and we're definitely, lucky and fortunate.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I've seen in my lifetime, Kenny's witness too, so many state game and fish departments are in trouble because numbers of hunters and fishermen have gone down, and they depend largely on the fees that they collect from license sales. And we're not solely dependent on that. I think it's so sweet that every citizen in the state of Missouri, when you go buy something, you're paying 1/8 of 1% sales tax to help support the best conservation department in the nation, if not the world. And we benefit from it. And you hit the nail on the head. We begin to take things for granted. Mm-hmm. And man, and our state park system has come so far with that 1/10 of 1% sales tax. I worked for DNR. I was a state park naturalist over at Bennett Springs back in the late 70s, and we were so poor, man, I couldn't buy a light bulb for the nature center, And the sales tax come along, and we're considered probably one of the top five state park systems in the country now, and that's because of that money. And you know what? Between the two of those, they probably don't cost me $200 a year.
No.
I mean, that's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Kenny's almost as old as me. He's watched much of this transpire as well. And we both have written many, many stories in support of both agencies and continued to do so. That was kind of a side bar. You got me started.
Yeah. That's my fault.
That's your fault.
And this needs to continue because there's always a lot of politicians out there wanting to take that money for their own agenda. So it's very important that we continue to support these incredible taxes. I've done stories all over the country, and Missouri is one of the great envies of conservation world because of this conservation tax. And it's not money wasted. It's money that goes into habitat. It goes into buying new properties. It goes into all the things that require to have the quality that we have here in Missouri. Yeah.
Absolutely. And Tyler, you mentioned, you know, people taking it for granted, but you don't have to travel very far. I spent some time in the southern states at media events over the last few years. And boy, I went to a state park and I'm going, this is a state park. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so run down. Weeds growing up everywhere, trash, and there was sort of a boat ramp there. The concrete just broke all to pieces. It would be a real danger and a menace. It just kind of broke my heart. I thought, boy, why do more people not understand the process and vote for a simple, 0.8% sales tax that can change their whole world when it comes to outdoors? And we know the economics of this whole thing. We know that money spent on conservation is a wise investment. Mm-hmm. It not only brings money into your state, but you're working into the future. I'm hoping my grandkids, and I got my first great-grandchild coming anytime. Oh, wow. I want that little girl to be able to enjoy the things that I've enjoyed. Yeah. I don't mind paying for it for her.
I mean, if you boil it right down to it, do we want things to be better or do we want them to be worse?
Well, that's what it comes down to.
I want there to be more conservation efforts in Missouri, not less.
Right. Exactly.
If you want to get right down to it.
The definition of conservation is wise use. And the Conservation Federation of Missouri and the Missouri Department of Conservation are the caretakers of this state. The wildlife part of the state, especially the outdoors, and they do a great job. In conservation, if you have a breakdown, one thing breaks down, then you have a chain reaction, then lots of things break down. The next thing you know, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
To the point where it could even threaten humanity. So conservation is more important than – it's not just fishing and hunting. There's a great deal more to it than that.
Yeah. You're exactly right. I think that's what the general public looks at. But, yeah, there's a lot more to that story. I mean, that's what's on the cover of the book, but that's not what's, you know.
And we're counting on you to carry that on.
I'm trying. I try.
I think it was on the right path, but I keep referring to our age, Kenny. But we can remember the time. I can remember – I grew up in Missouri Boot Hill, and, you know, we had fish to catch, and we chased rabbits and squirrels and raccoons. And I remember being in an old country store one time. The guy come in all excited. I found a deer track on an island in the Mississippi River. We were all excited about a deer track, And I never saw a deer till I was 16, 17 years old, or turkey either one. And now today, I just sold a farm place, but I could look out my back window and see deer almost every day, and quite often turkeys. And that's just phenomenal to me that could all happen in my lifetime. But I realized that if it could happen in my lifetime, it could go away in my lifetime. It hasn't taken just a few decades to build what we got, but it would take less years to destroy it if we pulled the funds in this fabulous state. Well, I want to go another direction here. We talk about our conservation department, state parks, the wonderful jobs that they do, but we have beaucoups of other organizations out here that do great things, but we also have individuals doing great things.
Yep.
And Mr. Kenny Keyser sitting here several years ago come up with a kids fishing program. He wrote material for this, I think, for schools and the whole nine yards. Tell us about that program, Kenny.
Well, it started in the 70s. I either considered the first ever to create a mentally and physically challenged kids fishing program, which is what we called it then. It's not called that now, of course. And sometime after that, in the early 80s, I was doing the Hooked on Fishing, Not on Drugs program that was written by my dear, dear friend, the late Sharon Rushton. And the Missouri Department of Conservation contacted me and asked me if I would do my program with Easter Seals and the Kansas City Chiefs. And I said, wow. Well, yeah, of course. And we did. We did it for 3 years, and we did quite well with it. That's where we – but when we started doing these programs, that's what we really learned, because first of all, you'll never meet a more honest or loving group than that, those kids. And once those kids get a taste of success catching a fish, mm-hmm. oh, my Lord, you can't keep them away from the water. They love it. So, and I do have a book that I will send to anyone that sends me their email for free on exactly that.
Well, give us that email.
Yeah, not just taking kids fishing with some kind of a ailment, but kids that are healthy as well. I've developed – this year I did a seminar at the Kansas City Sports Show on exactly that. My email is Keiser, K-I-E-S-E-R, Kenneth, K-E-N-N-E-T-H, at gmail.com. Let me know you want a book, and I'll just send it to you for free. Wow. No catches. We're not going to try to send you warranty for your car or anything.
No timeshares or anything.
No timeshares either. Do you have some for sale?
No. I liquidated all those.
Well, that's awesome. And this program started when? How many years ago?
In the 70s.
In the 70s. Yeah. So it's been around. It's reached thousands and thousands mm-hmm. of kids. Well, very well done. I can't, I don't know many people that have gone to that extent, but Keiser's a multi-talented person. He has multiple personalities as well, mm-hmm. but he's quite the, covered quite a gamut of writing, and he's into, you just call them Westerns? What mm-hmm. do you call them?
Yeah, right. Historically correct fictional Westerns.
Historically correct Western.
In other words, I take a place with the buildings like it would have been and everything, but I put my fictional characters in it.
Uh-huh.
So, and try to keep the firearms as accurate as possible to the day and everything, all the way down to McClellan saddle. Try to keep everything as honest as possible to make it historically correct.
Wow. Well, you've got a new one coming out anytime.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of that?
It is called
Surviving The Twisted Trail.
You got it.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
Now, this is what, your seventh or eighth book?
This is my eighth book, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All right. Now, Kenny Keiser also holds another title. He wrote a book on a 1993 flood. Tell us about that one, Kenny.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I was on the board of directors of the Outdoor Writers Association of America, and I was asked if I would photograph the flood damage in the Missouri River Basin when the flood came. And I had sandbagged the day before, and, you know, we couldn't believe what had happened, but it just went crazy. And I did. I went out with fire departments and police departments for like 2 weeks. Almost got killed 4 times doing it. Man, them floods are dangerous.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, Michael Bushnell at Northeast Publishing asked me if I would do a book on it. So I did, and I wrote the book and put my pictures in it, and now it's out there floating around all over the place.
And it's known as the official Missouri,
mm-hmm. yeah,
flood book.
Wow. Yeah, the 93 flood book. Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Well,
yeah, that went through the House of Representatives several times before they finally okayed it, but they did finally.
Well, that's cool.
Oh, that's amazing.
It is an amazing story, but he don't have much room in his cap for any more feathers, you know. But it's had an amazing career, but it all started with a simple love for the outdoors.
When I was young, like you said, we were poor. Yeah. And one of the neighbors gave me his outdoor magazines. And we moved to the city, and I was from the country, and I was like a fish out of water. Yeah. I got in fights and everything else, and I'd come home, and only thing I had was fishing, and I went fishing. And, of course, in them days, everything we caught or shot, we ate. I mean,
absolutely,
there was no sport to it. That was part of our food. I mean, this, and any time you could shoot a limit of squirrels or catch a mess of fish, that's meat you didn't have to buy.
Well, I can remember, too, particularly in a farming community, I can still remember the first squirrel I ever killed when I was, well, 11 years old, because that's when I first got my first gun.
It probably looked just like you.
Pretty close. But buck teeth and all, that's back when I had teeth.
No.
But, you know, I can remember being so proud bringing that squirrel home, and it became a regular thing then, rabbits and squirrels and catching fish, but particularly the hunting part of it, when I was able to bring meat home and I got to see my family consume that meat together, it was almost like a rite of passage, you know. I felt like all of a sudden, I'm a man. I'm helping provide.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
That was a special feeling. It really was.
It really was. And there was kind of a quiet accolades about it, you know. I mean, there were no applause. There weren't any speeches. There weren't any trumpets playing. But you could feel the feeling in the little dining room of that little farmhouse, you know.
Yeah.
And somebody made the comment. Well, they call me Ronnie. My name's Billy Ronald. But Ronnie killed a squirrel, you know. And boy, I can just remember the kind of cold chills and swell it up, you know, with pride, because I had helped feed my own mom and dad.
Boy, it's no lie. I remember the same thing.
And today, with what we're facing, I don't see so much of that, you know.
No.
And it's kind of a sad state of affairs in some respects, but we're still doing our best to get the stories out there and help people get into the outdoors. Well, Tyler.
Yes,
I don't know how old you are, but what's the path you're hoping to take from here on out?
Oh, wow. So I am in the process of hopefully starting to do some guided fishing trips.
Awesome.
And I'm hoping to start that hopefully this summer. Nothing official yet. Nothing concrete or anything, but what I've won, and this has been a goal of mine for years, is to take, you know, my education background and couple it with, you know, my passion for fishing, and specifically fly fishing. And I really want to do that. And I want that to become my second career when I retire from public education in a few years.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
I hope so.
I kind of drug my outdoor career along with, you know, we all got to have a day job. Most of us do. And then retired 13 years ago and it pretty much jumped into this full time. And, you know, I'm 76 years old, staring 80 in the face, man. And still loving it as much as I did the day I started. And early in my career, I said, the day it is not fun anymore will be the day I quit. And I'm still here.
Yep. I can relate to that. We were out on a boat today with Darren Sadler of Mozart Fishscapes, who guides down here on Danny Como. And I hooked into a fish, and it wasn't a monster. It wasn't, you know, something to hang on the wall. It was a 19-inch rainbow. And Danny Como.
Pretty sweet.
Like, I was shaking after I caught it. And I said to everybody else in the boat, I said, if I ever stop feeling this way, I need to stop doing it. Because, like, if it ever loses its edge, I need to find something else. I don't know what it'd be. But yeah, I completely agree.
Or it's a challenge ahead of you is to explain to that audience out there that feeling you just talked about.
Oh, man.
And then you hope that transpired to somebody new actually getting out there and trying it and having success and feeling the feeling that Kenny just talked about with his program.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes surprises, there are situations right in front of us we don't recognize. I've had the habit for many, many years of buying one or two fly rod sets per year just to give away to somebody to entice them into the program. Now, I go to church with a gentleman who's got two grandsons. He lived down around Farmington, Missouri, and he made the comment that I've got two grandsons. They're just a couple years apart, and they're getting interesting in fly fishing. The lights came on and said, guess what? I bought two fly rods a year or so ago that a father and son were supposed to come to my house and I was going to teach them basic fly fishing. They never showed up. I've never heard from them again. Those fly rod sets are still in my garage. Well, they went to those two boys. Well, I had another individual just a month or so ago who's rather wealthy, owns a lot of land, is a great smallmouth fisherman. And out of the blue, he calls me and he said, Bill, I want you to teach me how to fly fish. I knew there had to be a story, but well, he just bought another 200-acre farm that had a spring branch on it and a pretty good-sized spring, and he stocked it with rainbow trout. Well, I rounded up. This guy could have went and bought the best sages or whatever, you know. I went rounded up a $100 outfit and, yep. and took it to him with a box of flies, and he looked like a kid in a candy store.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter if it's that kid just getting started that's 10 years old or a guy in his 50s that comes along. If we can provide a little bit of encouragement, help get them started, we're opening up a whole new world to them.
So it's funny you mention that, and I'm starting to realize, Kenny, that you and I have more connections than I realized. Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, we didn't realize we lived so close to each other. Yeah. Or at least I've forgotten.
Yeah.
Number two, we had to move my great uncle out of his house in Hardin, Missouri in 1993 because of the Missouri River flood. And it got all the way up to his doorstep and it never came in. But I remember that as well.
I believe Hardin's in the book.
Yep. Because it's the home of the worst cemetery disaster, I think, in American history.
Oh, that's right. It is in the book because it washed out that cemetery. Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
I have a whole chapter on Hardin.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. Well, yeah, well,
I grew up with a fear of floods because every year in a boot hill, we lived on a ridge in a Missouri boot hill. Mm-hmm. It was 18 inches higher than everything else around us.
Oh,
that was a ridge.
Heck of a ridge.
And the water would literally, the backwater out of the Mississippi River when it started flooding would back up on our farm, and it would go by our house a mile or a mile and a half. And that ridge ran out to a county road where we could get out. Yep. And as long as I lived there, we never had water get up in our house. But I think it was 71 along there. I was in college, and the water got up in my mom and dad's house, floor of the house, for the first time ever. But my dad told a story. Now, he lived probably a half a mile south of there, across the Black Bayou that ran through our farm. They had another farm back there, and they had an old cypress house up on stilts. And my dad said the water was getting so high one time, they got their old cypress boat and started hauling furniture out of there because they knew it was probably going to get the house. Mm-hmm. And he said him and his dad went back to that old house, and they got caught in the dark. So there wasn't any leaving. So they tied their two boats up to the old house and sacked out on the floor to sleep. He said, I'm telling you the truth. We woke up the next morning, that old house had floated off the stilts.
And my.
And hung up on a sandbar a half a mile away. Yeah. They drifted in that house during the night, sound asleep.
Oh, my gosh. That was terrifying.
Oh, my goodness. Wouldn't it be? But the stories, oh, my goodness. We could sit here all night long and reminisce and talk about the past, the right now. We're all living great lives, and we look to the future for what we hope. Yep. For everybody else to be able to enjoy. Well, guys, go ahead.
And speaking of the future, the other connection that we have that I didn't realize we had, Kenny, is that you started a fishing program, and I've been running an after-school fly fishing club at my school, the middle school I work at for about 10 years now.
Have you?
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome.
So it's for eighth grade students, and we learn how to cast a fly rod. We go on 3 fishing trips in the fall, all local around Kansas City, 3 in the spring, and then we tie flies over the winter. So.
What am I classes I teach is teaching parents how to take kids fishing. There's a lot of seminars where people take their kids and they fish, and then they go home. Mom and dad would take me fishing. I loved it. Well, we don't know how, son or daughter, you know.
Yeah.
So I teach a class on here's how you do it. We can combine that.
That's a really, really good idea. Because I get a lot, because the way our program is set up is the parents have to bring their kids to the water, stay with them, and take them home because they provide all the transportation and liability things and things like that. But I mean, that's a great idea because most of the time the parents just sit around and watch their kids fly fish, but the parents, they have no idea what they're doing. So that would just make it, you know, more accessible. And
I got the idea from single mothers. I would do a fishing seminar at a sports show or somewhere, and a single mother would come up there and said, my dad used to take me fishing. What do I need to do to take my son fishing or my daughter fishing?
Yeah.
And those girls are fishing, pretty darn good fishers out there too.
Oh, absolutely. But it's incredible. You guys live 10 miles apart, and I've never had this conversation. Hey, that's how it works. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you guys on the program, and I hope this won't be the last time.
Hope not.
Old Kenny here has been on the program several times and always full of new great information.
There you go.
Hey, I'll look forward to hearing more out of you, Tyler, as
well.
Well,
thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hey, it helps the program move along.
There we go.
I'm just glad you qualified what I was full of.
Yeah. I can't tell everything I know.
There you go.
But folks, we hope you've enjoyed this program. And from Tyler Dykes, Kenny Keezer, myself, Bill Cooper, we're living our outdoor dreams. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and live your dreams as well.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you, you could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, the Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.